Hello and welcome to the Global Innovators in Business series. In this series, we interview leaders and innovators from different fields to share their advice and experience with undergraduate students to provide inspiration and motivation. We're so happy to have with us Mr. Vikas Garg. Vikas is the founder and CEO of Abelian. Abelian is a social media platform for vegan and vegetarian people. Abelian also aims to attract more people to live a sustainable and healthy lifestyle. So I'm very happy to have you with us here, Vikas.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So the first question is, I know you start your career very early as a banker in Wall Street, and also you worked in the public sector in the US for 2 years. How did you plan your early career path, and what's the most important lesson you learned before building Abelian?
So in my early career, I actually started working when I was really young. I grew up in New York City, and I always had this dream of working on Wall Street and becoming a hedge fund manager. And I read a lot of books about trading markets, and it was just all very exciting. And for an immigrant kid, that was always seemed like the fastest way to earn a living and make a buck and succeed, especially in a place like New York City. So I went headfirst into that career as a teenager, and never looked back, and went full forward with that sort of career path well into my 20s and my 30s. And within that, there were always a lot of opportunities for young people to take a lot of responsibility and be successful, especially if you were really willing to work very hard and you were very competitive. So it was a great place to be as an early sort of a youngster in my 20s. And I got to travel around the world, and it was fascinating. In my 30s, I really started to, I think, more about for myself and started to really think, what did I want my life to be about? What did I want my career to be about? What did I want my work to be about? And that's when I really started to feel like there was a divide between my values and the things that I actually was really proud of in my life, and how little many of the things that I had to be really was very proud of in my life had to do with my career and my work. And I started to feel like, wow, could I bring my values and my purpose together with my work? Wouldn't that be really fantastic? And so I felt like in my early 30s, I was really searching for that. And I finally found that beginning in 2016 and 17. And that's about the time that I started Abelian.
Yeah. What's the things that influence you to build Abelian? What impact you want to bring through this company? And can you tell us more about the story of Abelian?
So there's really two things at work, or maybe two or three things. One's very easy to understand. I grew up around the early days of technology businesses online. So think of platforms, companies like eBay and Etsy and Amazon. And so my dream was one day, wow, I want to build a platform. So I think that one is fairly easy to understand. The second one is when we moved to America, and growing up in India and then moving to America, one of the things that was a really big part of our values and our beliefs, and something that we actually just, we put into practice every single day, I'd almost say it's even better than being religious, because if you're religious, you go to church once a week, maybe. But when you're a vegetarian, you're living these values every single day, with every meal, with everything you put in your body. And so from birth, I was very fortunate. My mom and dad raised me and my brother vegetarian. And that's something that was always kind of part of our DNA then. And then the third thing, which is a more recent thing, was social media. I had never used social media in my life ever. And I never had a Facebook account or a Twitter account. But what happened in 2016 was this guy, Donald Trump, got elected president of the United States. And that was the first time I started looking at social media platforms. And I started thinking about, wow, look at how all of our private data is being used to spread misinformation, to even interfere with elections. If you remember going back to that time, there was a lot of news and evidence of these kinds of things. And I think fast forward now almost 10 years, eight, 9 years, it's just gotten worse. So that was actually for me the big catalyst that got me started thinking. I was always very proud to be American and to grow up as an immigrant in America and be afforded every opportunity. And I just really, obviously, the values of someone like Donald Trump were not congruent with my own. But beyond that, I really felt like, wow, I started to think, is there a better way to do, could we redesign social media to actually create impact in the world? And could we use that as a lever to build a platform and build something that actually made the world a better place and helped people, fundamentally helped people? So that was the beginnings of A Billion, was actually in the beginning of 2017 when I was really tackling these issues in my head. And I said, hey, you know what? I really feel like nobody else is doing anything about this. I want to try to do something about this by building a different kind of product in the social media world. So that was how we first got started with A Billion in the beginning of 2017.
Yeah, that's totally amazing. So I know now A Billion is the top vegetarian vegan app in many different countries. We have Europe and the United States and also for Singapore. I understand that you're also from Asian country. So I'm also from Asian country. Asian people are very connected to food. Food is a very important part in our life. And how do you think we can attract more people to go vegan? Because Asian people, usually we are meat eaters or meat lovers. So I think this part will be a hardest challenge for A Billion. How do you think about that?
Yeah. So a lot has changed in the world in the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. But I think if we go back in the historical context, mm-hmm. longer than that, most human beings actually ate a lot more plants, mm-hmm. effectively more vegetarian food when meat was scarce. And the industrialization of the world, beginning in the 20th century, and especially then after World War II, meant that meat went from being something that was very scarce, very luxurious, mm-hmm. to something that became abundant, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we've seen animal agriculture really destroy our environment. Mm-hmm. It's not good for our health, the way that what we're doing and the types of foods that we're consuming then, whether you're looking at dairy products or you're looking at meat products, there's certain types of meat that are now classified type 1 carcinogens right alongside tobacco. Dairy products are known now to cause breast cancer. You've got obesity, diabetes, cancer. You've got so many health issues. But then you've also got a lot of issues around the environment, around poverty, around access to clean water. I'll give you one example. If you ask most people how much water it takes to get an egg on your plate, most people just think of the water that's in the pot that they used to boil the egg. But it takes 240 liters of water to produce one egg because of all of the water that needs to go to creating the feed that then gets fed to the chicken, that the chicken then can produce one egg. Whether it's the environmental issue, the resource issue, the hunger issue, or anything else, what's at the center of our place actually has the ability to really transform the world, make the world more equitable, make the world a lot more sustainable, and make people a lot healthier, and make our relationship with nature one that is much more harmonious than where we are at today, which is, of course, there is no harmony in our relationship with biodiversity on this planet today. So we really, as human beings, have an opportunity. And I think that it's, so depending on every person, I don't like to generalize when it comes to people. We're all a little different. We're all a little bit of the same. But when it comes to people, it's almost like no matter what you're interested in or your affinity is, it pays to adjust the way that we eat. And today you don't have to do it in a way that feels like a compromise. Everyone is looking for fresher, healthier, more colorful foods, right? Everyone is more interested in more natural products. And the availability of these products is growing around the world. We're in a bit of a moment where that top down, when we look at influence, that top down is becoming more and more plant-based, more vegan. Whether you look at Novak Djokovic, the tennis champion, or you look at Lewis Hamilton, the F1 champion, or you look at hundreds of celebrities around the world and influential people who are now taking this lifestyle head on and becoming vegan, becoming very passionate about it. But we think that's also going to be a really big part and a really big driver of a community forming around the world. What's interesting on our platform, we're not just a platform for vegetarians and vegans. 60% of our users globally are actually meat eaters.
So what do you think about the new technology? For example, you mentioned plant-based meat, and there are also cell-based meat. For example, we have Other Farm, we have Shiok meat. We previously have interviewed with them. So what do you think about this new technology? Will this new technology attract more people to be vegetarian or vegan in the future 5 to 10 years?
So it's uncertain. If you look at companies, the two companies that you mentioned, they're both at a stage where they're trying to get closer to having a product that people can purchase readily. They can go to a store and they can purchase that item, or they can go to a restaurant and purchase that item. That hasn't happened yet, right? A lot of companies, I think what you're talking about is cell-based, right? And cultivated meat. A lot of companies, there are a lot of really interesting companies around the world. And the thesis around that is that if we can grow meat in a lab without the requirements that we have for growing meat or growing meat on a farm, for example, with animals, which is highly polluting, which is obviously not very good for health. It's not very good for the environment. It's not very good for animals. It's terrible for animals because they're killed. If we can do that without the animal, without the land, without the water, and we could do it in a much more environmentally sustainable way while giving people all of the pleasure and nutrition that they get or they think that they're getting from meat, then that would be a really good idea. So there's a lot of companies that are trying to do this. Ultimately, I think that the challenge here, what we don't know yet, is you can always create anything, right? But what is the consumer perception going to be around that? And ultimately, what is the consumer adoption going to be like? And adoption, part of it is people's perception and interest and desire. Is this something that they really believe is, you know, on par with what they want? And so if somebody wants a steak from a cow, is this going to replicate that experience for them? And then at what level? You can get a steak for $10 at a fast casual restaurant. You can get a steak for $250. That's been whatever. The cow has been massaged and is grazed on a farm in Japan or something like that, right? And I don't know the details. I've never actually eaten meat my whole life. But you can do a lot, right? And so that's also a question. And how do consumers really feel, whether it's necessary or not? And then, of course, cost is going to be a huge function. All of these products in research and development right now are, of course, incredibly expensive relative to the products that they're trying to replace. So if the cost can be brought down, this is something that a lot of people have been working on for a long time now, for maybe 10, 15 years. And it's exciting to see the developments. I hope that there's more products for people to try so we can get to that next stage of consumer figuring out whether consumers will really want and even want, but will really buy these products.
Yeah, it's still too early.
The good news is on a platform like ours, on a billion, there's 29,000 plant-based meat products, and they're reviewed, and many of them are reviewed amazingly well. Some people really love these products and they think that these products are there already in terms of delivering on taste and quality and the like. For tastes and feels just like beef or pork or even seafood products. While we can see, okay, eventually maybe something will happen with cultivated meat, there is a massive industry globally that has already been created around plant-based meat. I mentioned there's 29,000 products around the world on our platform just in that category. So there's definitely a lot of options for people who say, hey, okay, I want to reduce my meat consumption. And I feel like I still want and crave those things. So maybe I'll replace them with these plant-based alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next question is, Abelia now is not a non-profit organization. It's still a company that pursue profitability. At the beginning, when you want to found this company, how do you choose to make it non-profit or profit?
That's an interesting question. We often get the question, are we a nonprofit? And the reason for that is because we do a lot of good. We've built our, we are a for-profit. We're a corporation that's been set up in the United States. And we have taken a very different approach to growing our business. So this consumer review platform, we're a social media platform and we're a marketplace that's very peer-to-peer. We have 12 million people around the world that are using and have used our product since we began this journey. 60% of those I mentioned are meat eaters, and funnily enough, 80% of them are women. We've built up this sort of base of user-generated content. Our entire platform is all user-generated content. And in order to build that and grow that and get people to come on board and sign up and start posting content, what I wanted to do was really show people that this simple act of choosing better in terms of what you eat or the kinds of products that you buy, whether it's beauty products or fashion, clothing, food, we have 200 categories of different kinds of products on our platform, that makes an impact in the world. This simple idea of when you go out to dinner today, choosing what's on your plate and making that something vegan, that has an impact on the natural world. Right. And so how do you make that thread more apparent for people, for somebody who's sitting in a city who may have never even seen a chicken in their entire life, an actual chicken or an actual cow? How do you make that connection for people? Right. And so what we did is we created this gamification that rewards users with credits when they consume something that's better, that's more sustainable, that's vegan. We actually back that up with a token, with a credit that they can then apply. So they earn money to donate to one of 60, 70 nonprofits around the world. We support a lot of animal welfare causes, environmental causes. We support some humanitarian causes, education causes, reforestation causes, marine life conservation groups around the world. And we're really proud to have put this coalition of around 60, 70 organizations worldwide together, going from Argentina to South Africa to Germany to Brazil to the US to Mexico to parts of Southeast Asia, Singapore, Hong Kong, China, Australia. We've built this amazing global platform. And our community, through this gamification, is incredibly altruistic. So we built this beautiful altruistic community of people who are on a billion, who really want to help and change the world. And so for that reason, people think we're a nonprofit. We've donated $3 million. I think of that as a better way to think about marketing. If we had just spent that money on Facebook ads or Google ads, we probably wouldn't have gotten to where we are today or be sitting here today having this interview. But what we did is we created that amazing gamification in our product. We have amassed this great base of user-generated content that then helps people around the world make better choices. And then we're able to build a business around that. And then at the same time, that does a lot of good. It helps other people be more vegan, experience a more sustainable lifestyle. Many people are not even on our platform for food. They're checking out like a cruelty-free beauty brand. But it helps people make better choices for the planet. And then at the same time, it helps all these amazing organizations. But we are very much a for-profit corporation.
Yeah. As a startup, how do you think the startup ecosystem currently in Singapore compared with, for example, in the US or in the other places in the world?
Yeah, so I think I happen to be here. So my wife and I and our dog moved to Singapore 9 years ago for a job that I got in my old industry, in the hedge fund industry and finance. And so then when I decided about just over two years into that, that I wanted to do this and I wanted to create a company doing all of these things, I felt, okay, you know what? Super early stage startup, 99% chance of failure. And so it doesn't really matter where I started to do the initial legwork. And we're here already, and our family loves being here. We're only a couple of years into this move, so we got to let it play out. And so I said, okay, yeah, we're going to start the company here. And I enrolled in a coding boot camp, and that helped me meet my first few employees. And we got off to the races really early start. Now that we're six, almost 7 years into it, what I've learned is it's really important to ask yourself, where is the ecosystem strongest for what it is that you're doing? So if you are building something that's very Southeast Asia focused, and maybe it's a fintech platform, it's a fintech play, or maybe it's something else, right? But that's very relevant to this market. Singapore is, boom, the right place for Ian. If you are building something for the Indian market, you probably wouldn't be here, right? We're building something for the entire world. But when we've let the chips fall where they are, we haven't gone out and done a ton of marketing to try to build up user bases in particular areas. Whenever we have, I'd say we've failed. So where we've succeeded is organic growth. And so by virtue of that, 30% of our user base is in North America, right? Another 15% or so is in South America. Then 30% of our user base is in Europe. That right there, 75% of our user base is not in this part of the world. And then when I look at a few other markets, it's really like 85%, 90% of our user base is not in this part of the world. And it's the same thing with our base of clients. Most of our clients are sitting in the United States, Canada, the UK, South Africa, Italy, Germany. In fact, I think we have more clients in Indonesia than we do in Singapore. I think I haven't gone into it now. If I had to say, hey, okay, where's the best place for, let's say, our company to be based for the next 5 years? It's definitely a conversation that's something that I think about a lot these days, because we've gotten to a certain stage and now it's, where are we going to get a combination of talent? And talent isn't just about, oh, do people have the skills, but also do people have the desire, right? How many people will have the desire? Where is the largest group of people that will have the desire to work for a company like ours, right? That are also very skilled. Where is the largest base of customers and clients for what it is that we're doing? And where is the largest base of capital? And so that these are all questions that we have today about where should we be based for the next 5 years? Singapore is a great ecosystem, but I think that anybody thinking about where to get started, you've got to consider where's the best ecosystem for what it is that you want to do. And that probably 90% of the time, the right place to go and start your business.
Yeah. You moved to Singapore when you were still a banker.
Yes.
And now you start your own business. So what's the biggest challenge that you face, like personally and professionally, when you have these kind of change in your career and also when you pursue your goal?
There's so many. I always had the luxury of working for these really well-known, reputable places in the world, companies, right? Investment banks, big institutional money managers, hedge funds that people really knew. And the funny thing is, when you're in these organizations, there's a lot that you take for granted, right? You just have a steady stream of people like yourself, right? Incredible, like sharp business school students, amazing degrees and backgrounds, and have lots of great work experience. When you're just starting up, unless maybe you're like a well-known startup founder, it's actually really tough, because most people don't want to take a bet on a really early stage company. The pay is not going to be that great. You don't know if the stock is going to be worth anything. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of long hours, right? And then you're also often dealing with somebody who's maniacal. You're dealing with somebody who's got it all on the line, like a founder who's really maniacal about their business and what they're trying to do, especially if they're trying to build something that changes the system, right? So it's difficult. It's a difficult job. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges when you're moving from like an established company to starting out something on your own, or you're moving from having that kind of very supportive environment where you have very sharp, talented people around you. And then when you start up in the beginning, you've really got to be very scrappy and figure out how do you get this from zero to the next stage and go from there. So you don't have all the resources in the world, which is great because you actually realize how little most of that stuff matters, right? You don't have a lot of capital necessarily. Most people don't when they start businesses. And then it's just hard, right? When you're a nobody, less people will take a chance on your service, right? Especially on the client side or anything. We're able to deliver much better value for our customers than Google or Facebook. But we're still the new kid on the block. And everybody who's sitting inside of a company doing marketing has been trained on those other platforms. So you're fighting the incumbent. And then when you're building a business, so you're building different things, right? You're building a product, then you're building how to sell that product and all these other things. And so you're always chasing product market fit around different things. And then finally, the other big challenge is managing people, or rather just what you do. As a founder, you've got so much emotional, like you're all in, right? The thing is your whole life. And you naturally, I don't know, in the beginning, it's just, this is the first company I ever founded where I built up a team, right? And you're so passionate and invested about it. And I think at some point you got to realize that not everybody else is. But that's tough. That's always tough because you're just go and you've got to be this internal optimist. You've got to be very quick and nimble. When something breaks, something fails, something gets completely screwed up, you've got to immediately move on from that and on to the next thing. But I've learned that that's not always easy when you've got a team. Yeah, it's tough all around. Everything is much, much easier when you're in a corporate setting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know Ablea is now still a very lean team. It is not like 100 employees. It's still a very...
We're just 10 people.
Yeah. How do you choose the correct talent when you like search for all those like young new graduates? Or do you have some suggestions for young professionals if they want to have build their impact through their career?
Yeah. Some of our best people. So I started working when I was really young, 13, 14 years old. And I used to just, I would go out there and put myself out there and get all these internships. I would tell guys, I go for interviews and I tell them that, hey, just give me 2 subway tokens so I could get here and go home at the end of the day and a couple of slices of pizza or something. And I'm happy. And I'd come work for them for free. And that education in the work environment when I was a kid was so much more valuable to me than the actual education that I paid for, like college and all of that. I don't think that college was totally useless in many ways. But it helped me learn how to be my own person, because you're not living with your parents anymore. But I'm not sure that the education was actually worth anything. But so workplace, so we've always had a very strong culture of interns. And I'd say that we've probably had over 150, maybe high school, secondary school, college, and advanced degree interns working for the company over the years. So every year we have between maybe 10, 15, or some years we've even had 20 or so interns across engineering, data science, data engineering, marketing, PR, etc., anywhere where somebody has a passion. And many of those people have come and eventually joined the company in some other capacity, either as a full-time investor. Some of them have actually become investors in the company. We have, in one case, we have a high school student, a secondary school student, who went to my high school in New York City in Manhattan. And I'm so proud of her. She's in her second semester now of her freshman year at Harvard. And she's also, I count her now as an investor in $1 billion. I'm very proud to have that responsibility. And yeah, we've had some of our best full-time people. Because college students, it's so pure. You're getting a person at an age where they're still at an ideology. They haven't been broken by the man. They haven't been broken by companies working in boring jobs and corporates and having the life and the air sucked out of them, right? They're still, they believe in things. They're idealistic. And they're, so we've that's been a great source of talent for us, because if they have that idealism and the philosophy, and then they want to put it to practice, but then they also have a skill or a skill that they're trying to build, that recipe is amazing. Fast forward, we found that some of the most ineffective people are people who come from companies and corporations who are thought leaders, but they need a lot of people to do things for them. That's hard in a startup environment. And or they're there for opinions and whatnot, but they're not actually looking at the data. They're not actually really working in the pits, trying to get the next thing and the next thing and the next thing done. And that's challenging. So I think the sweet spot for us are people who are young, in their 20s, who are very good at something. It could be like, let's say, software engineering. And they really want to develop that into something that, you know, that they're also very passionate about. Ideally, they also align with our values. We have had a lot of people come and go out of the company who like the idea of what $1 billion was about, but they could never completely really get into it. It was almost like they were being held back. Maybe it was by themselves, by their friends, by like their social environment. They could just never really fully get there. And I find that having that value alignment means that you've got somebody who's really going to try to do their best and go through all the crap that you have to working in a startup in order to make this successful, because they care about the mission, because it's actually the same mission as their mission in life or something that they really care about in life.
Yeah. We have interviewed lots of successful entrepreneurs, and many of them actually start their career in big companies like you, but they start to build their own company after they for example, finance industry for 10 or 15 years. Do you think for a young professional, it's better to start with a big name company, or they can deep dive into the startup environment directly?
You can go either way. If you go and you work for a big company, you might end up doing really well. You could also choose to leave. If you're going to go work for a big company, I would try to go make sure that you go and you figure out who are you going to be working for, who's the person that you are going to be working for, and you interview that person the same way that they would be interviewing you, that you really make sure that the person you are going to spend the most amount of time with in that company is somebody who's really exceptional, if that's possible, if you can do that's one. If you're interested in creating your own company, if your goal in life is, hey, I want to start my own business, my advice would be just go and do that right now. Just do it now. If you're 21 years old, start a business. And the sooner you do it, and that's actually what my older brother started in the same way. He went into an investment banking program and he stuck with it for a year, and he realized, I'm working so hard for somebody else. I'm getting sick and from how hard I'm working. I might as well go and do this for myself. So he had that kind of revelation very early on. He must have been 22 at the time. And so he just dove right in, and he's been an entrepreneur since that age for now more than 20 years. And it's incredible. how much he's achieved and how much he's accomplished. Other people can really benefit from having some strong fundamentals. So if you can get 2 years, 3 years under your belt of working in a great environment, you get a lot of training, that's always valuable. Learning how to talk, learning how to present yourself, learning how to write clearly, and learning how to use financial modeling. All of these tools are really important. They'll be valuable for your whole life. But I think the key is, whatever you do, find something that's going to really challenge you, and find something that you're going to have to really work very hard in the first few years of your career.
Okay, that's all for today. Thank you so much for being here. It's such a great honor to invite you.